You have a new blue sheet in your inbox. That's the new general file list. General file this afternoon will be House Bill 63, House Bill 27, House Bill 39, House Joint Resolution 2, House Joint Resolution 3, House Bill 21, House Bill 22, House Bill 103, House Bill 35, House Bill 26, House Bill 45, 59, 36, and 50. And Mr. Speaker, with that, I move the House resolve itself into the Committee of the Whole.
You've heard the motion. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, say no. Representative Hunt. Ladies and gentlemen, Committee of the Whole will please come to order. Mr. Chairman, did you have something? Okay. Let's get underway here. The first bill for consideration is House Bill number 63. The reading clerk will please read the bill.
House Bill 63, introduced by Representative Barlow, Game Animal Licenses Limitations, an act relating to game and fish. Mr. Chairman, your committee number 6, Travel, Recreation, Wildlife, and Cultural Resources, to whom was referred House Bill 63, Game Animal Licenses Limitations, respectfully reports same back to the House with the recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Representatives Allen, Clem, Flitner, Freeman, Garou, Haley, Steinmetz, Noes, Representatives Halverson and McGuire. Signed, Representative Allen, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Chairman Allen?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with a recommendation that House Bill number 63 do pass. And for the explanation on the bill, I'll turn it over to Representative Haley.
Representative Haley.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This proposed statute will allow the Game and Fish Department, the department that currently manages wildlife in the state, the flexibility to maintain mountain goats dispersing into previously unoccupied habitat, and provide opportunity for sportsmen to participate in a goat hunt. On your desk, in your box, there should be a 3-page handout that has some additional information. It shows a map with the current goat hunting areas, the affected sheep areas, and the new proposed goat hunting areas. This bill would allow sportsmen to get a general goat license, which is not available currently. The only license you can get for a goat is a limited quota license, which is you can only have one in a lifetime. This general license, you can have one every year. The biggest reason we don't want goats, where they're dispersing to, is because there's sheep hunt areas there and currently occupied by bighorn sheep. The goats will have the ability to pass on certain bacterial pathogens such as pneumonia, bovine diarrhea, respiratory problems, besides the lungworms and internal parasites. So we don't want to jeopardize the health and vigor of the sheep herd by allowing goats there. It's an extremely rugged country. There'll be very few people that hunt up there because of the ruggedness, and you'd have to have an outfitter or the equipment that an outfitter would have. It's not just a day hike up there to look for a goat. And that should do it.
Thank you, Representative Haley. Is there any further discussion on the bill? Chairman Eklund.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm kind of curious. I'd like a little bit of an education on mountain goats. Are they invasive to the area, or they're not? They're not native to the area. I'm a little surprised by that.
Mr. Chairman?
Representative Haley, please.
Mountain goats are not indigenous to the state of Wyoming. Bighorn sheep are. We do currently have three mountain goat hunting areas that are already established by the Game and Fish Commission. They are in areas that are not occupied by bighorn sheep.
Any further discussion? Any further discussion? Oh, I'm sorry, Representative McGuire, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd like to speak against the bill for several reasons. One of the issues is that we no longer look at our green book. If you look at this particular section, it's a rather lengthy section where the Game and Fish Department sets out quota points, and, for example, if you get a moose license, it's once every 5 years. It has been for a long time. It has been, if you got a mountain goat license, it was once in a lifetime. And that sort of forced people to be extraordinarily serious about when they did get a license, whether they were going to go hunt it. And in testimony at the committee, the department stated that last year there were 4,200 applicants for mountain goat. 4,200. And they issued 32 permits. Now, that is a massive number of people that are interested in hunting goat. And to say that, well, it's very remote and we won't have anybody go up there hunting, I disagree with that strongly. There's a new generation of hunters. They hunt light. They hunt fast. And I think that if you open this up to general license, it will be an ill-conceived plan at best. There will be a line waiting outside the stations where they're selling these licenses, and they will have absolutely no control over who's going up there, and it will be extraordinarily difficult to control how many are harvested in these areas. Also, they say that mountain goats are not native to the state of Wyoming. Well, you know what? Horses aren't either. They came over with the Spaniards. The goats have come in from other states, and when there is a vacuum, nature abhors a vacuum, and the goats come in, and they start to occupy places where there's open feed and open range. And so, yes, they have migrated across the borders. But to say that they're an invasive species is something of a that's not exactly correct. They have moved into the state just like other animals have. Ravens to be one is one example. So I think that the Wyoming Game and Fish, or excuse me, the department that controls this, they can certainly issue as many licenses as they want. And they can control this in an orderly manner, and they can set it out just the way it's always been. You apply, you draw. If you get one of those, then just like the other 32 people who received a permit last year, and they had almost a 90% success ratio last year. It shows that people are very serious. They get up there, they'll harvest, and they'll harvest as many as the department wants. But to open it up and to have a derby-type situation, I think that that would be a mistake. I speak against the bill. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Alderson. Oh, okay. Representative Lindholm.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. On and in favor of this piece of legislation, you know, this is just a, you're still going to have management from your for your agency that manages these critters, and it's the same type of management practice, albeit in a different way. Do we do this for other critters? Yeah, you bet. The mountain lion, we have a quota in different areas for how many mountain lions can be taken. They're sold as general tags. Are there, because of that system, are there too many mountain lions taken, or is the quota ignored? Absolutely not. It's the way that species is managed. It's a good management practice. It's a management practice that works. And in this case, we'll be able to sell some extra tags. If the quota is filled, those licenses are now garbage. It's the way it works with mountain lions. That's the way it'll work under this piece of legislation. So on and for the bill.
Further discussion, Representative Halverson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The fine representative from the number one county outlined my objections to this bill very well. I would urge your no vote. This is not a problem over in, I live in one of the goat hunt areas, and there will be lots of hunters up there. The fact that it is rugged country is true, but they will go up there. They will go up there and hunt these goats, and we haven't seen a bighorn sheep over there lately. And I just urge your no vote on this bill. Thank you.
Representative Barlow.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So my name is on this bill as well, and this bill comes out of interim discussions, was not within the context of interim topics. And so you look at what policies the legislature puts forth that limits the ability of the agency to actually manage the species, of which the equids are not one of the species they manage, as was referenced earlier, manage the species that they are responsible for. And this is a policy decision that this body has made in the past, the legislature has made in the past, about limitation of a lifetime. Only two species fall under that. One, whether you want to call it a migratory species that showed up or a species that's non-native, however you want to describe it, is one issue. The other one that I'll just point out is in the bill we are not addressing because of it has some implications with the federal government management under an act that looks out for those they think there are too few of. So this is a policy decision. Now to pretend that we know how this agency manages and will manage this based on what you've heard today, I think is going too far. They have numerous species that they manage, species that are not any more numerous than this in some cases, and they manage them, and I don't know that anybody's heard concerns about how those are managed with both limited and general licenses. Just because we're having a general license doesn't mean it's an unlimited number of licenses, as an example. Just because it's a general license doesn't mean that there aren't the same hunter ethics and all those things that are applicable. So I think that this is a policy decision for this body to say, do we want to give that agency the tool to manage a population in areas where management through their traditional means, with the addition of this lifetime limitation, which is our policy, not theirs, that is our job, to change this. So I would ask you to favorably consider this as untying the hands of an agency that we expect to manage wildlife on behalf of all of Wyoming and all wildlife. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Representative Haley, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have some figures that might help address some of the concerns. And that is, on the goat population, there are approximately, and of course we don't know exactly how many, the goat herd in Sheep Area 6, if you look on your map, there's about 25 mountain goats. They currently move between Grand Teton National Park and Targhee National Forest. so they're not always in a place where you can hunt them. The other three sheep areas, 5, 4, and 3, they estimate that there's 5 goats in each one. I think the paramount concern here is disease transmission. We don't want to take a chance on letting those goats commingle with sheep and spreading this, the various diseases that they can. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Henderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I want to speak on and for the bill, but I have a question regarding page 2 at the top where it has the words limited quartered. If it's a general tag intent here, could the bringer please explain that a bit more, how that's going to transpire?
Standing by. Representative Bailey, do you want to respond?
Would you ask the good representative to restate his question?
Absolutely.
Sure.
Representative, would you? Thank you. Yep.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So on page 2 at the top, it refers to limited quota, and I support the idea of having a general tag season for these game animals. Would like an explanation of how the process would transpire with regard to the use of the word limited quota at the top of page 2.
Representative Bailey.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Limited quota licenses are about what it says. You have to apply for them. There's a limited number. And in the instance where there's a goat, in this instance where you're talking about goats, it's a once-in-a-lifetime license. Where we currently have limited quota goat licenses, one hunt area has 300, and they estimate over 300 head of goats that are huntable. So it's a viable population. The other one, which is down by Palisades, down in the northwestern edge of the state, has approximately 145 goats. So the difference between having a general license in an area where there's 5 goats, you may or may not even see one, and hunting in a goat herd that actually has a viable population. That's the difference. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative. Any further discussion or questions on the bill? Oh, Representative Crank.
Thank you, Chairman. I'm up against the bill. I, being one of the folks that qualifies as never doing this again, I think one thing is they're not hard to hunt. They're just hard to get to in the area they're at. Secondly, it kind of takes away then if, and it's, we're talking limited quota, and then we talk about unlimited license or something. I think it takes away the fact that those people that have done this before aren't getting one. So I think I have a question. I'm a little confused about the conversation that's gone on before. Is it limited quota, once in a lifetime, or these open general season stuff? I'm just a little confused there. I'm against the general season stuff.
Representative Freeman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think it's important to realize that, one, this is a policy decision, and two, it's giving our keepers of wild animals a tool. They won't issue these licenses unless there is a serious concern to maintain the mountain sheep herds. They are in very difficult situations, but places. It will take extreme efforts to get there. And the other thing is that it will have a very small number of animals that would be available for harvest. The other licenses that are once in a lifetime, we've already heard that it has a 90% success rate. If you buy this license, it's more of a crapshoot. And then the second thing is they want to eliminate those animals because they are a danger to the natural herds that are in there. I would ask for your support of the bill.
Question having been called, all those in favor of Chairman Allen's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that House Bill 63, no,
yeah,
yes, 63, that House Bill 63 do pass, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no.
No.
Ooh. Ooh, this, I think I'm the first for this one this year. Chair is in doubt. Those in favor, please rise. The 38 in favor, House Bill 63 is passed Committee of the Whole. Yeah, my bad. thank you. The next bill for consideration is House Bill 27. The reading clerk will read the bill.
House Bill 27, sponsored by School Facilities. School Facility Property Insurance, an act relating to school facilities. Mr. Chairman, your committee number 4, Education, to whom was referred House Bill 27, School Facility Property Insurance, respectfully reports same back to the House with the recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Representatives Bobie, Brown, Flitner, Freeman, Hunt, Kenner, Northrup, Paxton, Piperinen. Signed, Representative Northrup. Chairman.
You have heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure? Representative Clem, do you have a privilege?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Privilege of the floor.
Please proceed. My apologies.
Thank you. Kind of waiting for this, and I'll take this privilege right now. Today's kind of a special day in our household. It's actually today that the 17th marks the 13th anniversary since I was injured in a skiing accident. But most importantly, to my son and wife who are listening back home, it's his 5th birthday. And so I just wanted to wish my son, Zane, a very happy birthday, and to let him know that his dad misses him, so thank you, Mr. Chairman, for the privilege there.
Thank you, Representative, and if your son and your wife are listening on the internet, folks, let's sing Zane happy birthday.
Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday, dear Zane. Happy birthday to you.
Thank you, Representative Clem. You have heard the reading of the bill, folks, and so what is your pleasure, Chairman Northrup?
I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises... Whoops, that's the wrong one. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises the report, it do so with the recommendation that House Bill number 27 do pass. And here with the explanation is our good Chairman of the Whole.
Where'd he go?
Representative Hunt.
Sorry about that. Thank you, Mr. Temporary Chairman of the Whole. Folks, I bring to you today House Bill 27. This is a bill that was brought up sort of in discussion within the Committee of Select School Facilities and was not really on our committee's agenda this past interim, but it did sort of just come up in discussion. And so what it effectively is you'll look at the bill, and pretty brief, but it says that, starting on page 1, line 13, Board of Trustees of each school district within the state shall procure a policy or policies for property insurance covering all education, administrative, and transportation facilities owned or maintained by the district. And so the reason this came about is that we sort of found out that oftentimes school districts are loath to get into fights with insurance companies that they have holdings with. And in a few cases, I believe there's only three, but it's not known whether they have policies or not. Most school districts do understand that. But the gist of this is that oftentimes districts, rather than fight with their insurance companies, have been coming to the state to ask for emergency funds in a case of damage to their buildings. And so whether it be a fire, whether it be hail damage, so on and so forth, it has been quicker for them to come to the state and say, we need some emergency funds to make these repairs, as opposed to filing a claim with their insurance company and then going through all that rigmarole. And so in light of our financial issues, in light of particularly our school CapCon issues, this is simply a bill that just sort of says that you need to have a policy if you are a district to cover all of your policy buildings. And outside of this, we had a discussion, and this may or may not be, it's not really germane to this in particular, but I think it is relevant to the discussion, that rules were put together that says, yes, school district, please fight with your insurance company before you come to the state. So that's the idea of the bill, and I'd be happy to stand for questions. Thank you.
Questions on the bill? Representative Larson.
So I guess I have two questions, if I could. One is the funding for insurance policies built into the funding model now? And if not, are they going to scream like a smash cat until we put that in there? And then my second question is, is the state then not a payer of last resort? They should use insurance. Do we have any language in there that says we're? I don't know how that works, but maybe you can answer that.
It's yours.
Representative Hunt.
Thank you for that. The question is if this is the state of the pay of last resort, I think that's a bit up in the air. Mainly what this revolved around was making sure that we did have insurance policies for all of the districts. But Representative, I guess if you could rephrase that better, I was trying to juggle a couple things up here. Thank you.
Okay. Representative Northrup, Chairman Northrup.
Thank you. Okay, so what this came about was we had a district that came to school facilities, said they have hail damage on our building, and we would like for you to help pay for that hail damage. And we said, well, shouldn't you go to your insurance company? And they said, no, we don't have an insurance company. That's what started the initial bill. Of course, if they had had insurance, they would go to the insurance company. The insurance company would pay X amount, and whatever X minus the total is, the state will end up paying the rest of it, or the district through the state. Does that answer the question?
Okay. Any further discussion on House Bill 27? Any further discussion? Representative Gray?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Can we have a little more discussion about the fiscal impact on our school districts if we do this? Thank you.
Okay. I'm going to go with Chairman Northrup to answer that question. We'll come back.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Within the funding model, there is $300 per ADM for these kind of things, for the insurance, for some of the other things that are going on. And so, yes, it's built into the model, and it's there for their use.
Okay. Representative Flitner.
Just to speak to the good representative in the land where my godparents live, where is he? I did ask that question, and they did say that most school districts presently have private insurance on their buildings, and we did ask what the impact might be, and they just, I guess they felt like this would not really be that big of an issue at the local level.
Any further discussion? Sensing none, is there a call for the question? Question being called. All those in favor of Representative Northrup's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so. The recommendation that House Bill 27 do pass, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Okay. House Bill 27 has passed Committee of the Whole.
Okay, thank you. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 39. The reading clerk will please read the bill.
House Bill 39, introduced by Education. Education Resident Tuition Reimbursement. An act relating to resident tuition reimbursement for K-12 public schools. Mr. Chairman, your committee number 4, Education, to whom was referred House Bill 39, Education Resident Tuition Reimbursement, respectfully reports same back to the House with the recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Representatives Bovee, Brown, Flitner, Freeman, Hunt, Kinner, Northrup, Paxton, Piperinen. Signed, Representative Northrup, Chairman.
You vote the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Chairman Northrup?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with the recommendation that House Bill number 39 do pass, and I'll explain the bill. House Bill 39 is trying to codify an action that took place as a budget amendment a few years ago. We have a district within the state that has a large number of students that it acquired from from that yellow park that's up in the northwest corner of the, of the state. And so, in order to pay for the education of these students, they asked that there be immediate funds available. And so the way that it has been set up in the past is you have a student that goes out of your district, and it happens quite frequently along the western edge and the northern edge and the eastern edge of the state. It's mostly an edge problem in the state. So these kids are going into these other states to go to school just because that school is closer to home than it is for them to go in their state. The district then is reimbursed a year later. Well, this large number of students was going to cause a financial burden on the district, so there was passed at that 2 years ago a budget amendment that said this district will get the money paid to them at the same time upon request of it after they pay it to the state that their kids are going to. Okay, so it turns out that it's just not fair to everybody else that this district's getting this happening to them and everybody else is not. And so this is what we're trying to do is in this bill codify it that all districts get repaid for students that travel out of state to get their education, especially those on the edge. And so you're probably wondering, what rate do these students get paid at? Is it the Wyoming rate, or is it the state to the north, or the state to the east or west of us? And it's actually the out-of-state rate for the state that they're going into. So if it's the state to the west of us, then it's the out-of-state rate for that, which, of course, is considerably lower than it is in our great state. I stand for questions.
Question having been called, all those in favor of Chairman Northrup's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with the recommendation that House Bill 39 do pass, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. House Bill 39 has passed Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is House Joint Resolution number 2. The reading clerk will read the bill, the resolution.
House Joint Resolution 2. Introduced by Representative Lindholm. Balanced Budget Amendment Resolution. a joint resolution petitioning Congress to call a convention to propose amendments to the Constitution of the United States to require a balanced federal budget. Mr. Chairman, your Committee Number 1, Judiciary, to whom was referred House Joint Resolution 2, Balanced Budget Amendment Resolution, respectfully reports same back to the House with the recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Representatives Biteman, Kirkbride, Olson, Pannell, Winters. Noes, Representatives Baker, Jennings, Pelkey, Salazar. Signed, Representative Kirkbride, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Chairman Kirkbride?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that House Joint Resolution 0002 do pass. We turn it over to our good colleague from the shadow of the tower in House District 1.
Representative Lindholm.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ladies and gentlemen of the 64th, I rise today to ask for your vote on House Joint Resolution Number 2, a resolution which calls for a convention strictly limited to the proposal of a balanced budget amendment at $20 trillion, or $166,000 per taxpayer in debt. Our nation's capital is bankrupting America. To reach that staggering total, the U.S. government has borrowed trillions of dollars from foreign governments. It has looted over $5 trillion from our nation's trust funds, including trillions from Social Security and nearly $1 trillion apiece from the military and government worker retirement funds. When that didn't prove enough to fund its deficits, Washington started manufacturing currency with trillions printed since. As history has shown us, the printing of currency is the last act of a desperate nation. If you thought that that sobering fact had any impact on our government, you would be sadly mistaken. The budget office in our capital projects that Washington will continue to borrow trillions of dollars into the future until we are completely broke and unable to fund defense due to the hundreds of billions of dollars we blow each year just on interest. This fact has prompted every chair of the U.S. Joint Chief of Staff and the current nominee for Sec Defense to identify the U.S. national debt as by far the greatest threat to national security. My friends, the greatest threat to national security, as judged by our best military minds, comes from within. The irresponsible borrowing of Congress is a greater threat to our national security than any of the two bigger countries that we're currently having issues with, or the terrorist organization that is. That was a good one. All right. My friends, we simply cannot sit idly by and watch as Washington destroys the greatest nation the world has ever known, and the only remaining hope for liberty worldwide. Fortunately, our founders gave us a constitutional tool that we can use to prevent national bankruptcy, but we must act before it is too late. On Article 5 of the U.S. Constitution, you will find that it requires 34 states to call a convention to propose an amendment and 38 states to ratify it. Those in the opposition will try and distract you from the predictions of doom by claiming that the convention can unilaterally amend and destroy the Constitution. That's simply untrue. Any amendment proposed by the convention must be ratified by 38 states. And with current control of 33 legislatures that tends towards our Bill of Rights, that's not an issue. You simply can't get there not without the control of those 33 legislatures. My friends, the bottom line is that our founders granted the states the power to solve this problem, and it would be a historic crime if we refuse to take action because we can be fooled into fearing our own power, states' rights power. Accordingly, I ask for your vote on House Joint Resolution Number 2, which calls for a convention strictly limited to the proposal of a balanced budget amendment to the U.S. Constitution, the only way the states can prevent our nation's capital from bankrupting America.
Question. Any further discussion? Question having been called. All those in favor of Chairman Kirkbride, whoa. I see hands going up. Representative Alverson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm going to urge your no vote on this. The good representative from number one district, talked about the 34 states needed to call and the 38 states needed to pass. I wonder why the push to a convention. If we attain 34 states to get to the call stage, why not put in the extra effort to get four more states, bringing us up to 38, and we have an amendment without a constitutional convention. On page 2, lines 9 through 11, the call says that in any fiscal year, the Congress may not exceed the total of all estimated federal revenues for that fiscal year. It doesn't say anything about increasing federal revenues or restraining spending. It just says that they may not exceed the total of all estimated federal revenues. And together with, quote, any related and appropriate fiscal restraints. This is not good enough for me. I would rather see some language in there that says, that defines the related and appropriate fiscal restraints, such as less spending, no taxation, and no borrowing. I'd rather see language addressing spending, taxing, and borrowing specifically. The related and appropriate language really bothers me. There's just way too much wiggle room in this. And I urge a no vote.
Representative Lindholm.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So in regards to the language being too loose and not having enough wiggle room to specify exactly what we want, ladies and gentlemen, a convention of states is just that. It's a convention of states for the states to gather together and decide on that language as proposed so that they can actually ratify something. If we specify exactly down the line, we have nothing that to work with, much like this body works today. So in regards to the question on, I forget, if the good bringer of that last question will bring her first question again, I'll answer it. Thank you.
Representative Winters, go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and I'll pick up from my good colleague across the House there. I'll tackle that first question that you missed. The question was, why not just go for 38 states rather than the 34? And it's partly because we are very clearly trying to follow the provisions that are found within the Constitution, not to supersede, go beyond, or anything else. The Constitution highlights it in this particular way, 34 states to call, 38 states to ratify.
Representative Hallinan.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I proposed a bill in 2010 very similar to this bill, and unfortunately it did not pass. I am very pleased to be able to sit in this legislature at this time and vote yes on and for the bill. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Jennings.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. I rise in opposition to this. I ask the body to think about, for a whole number of reasons that you all have heard me, this is a question of integrity. Constitutionally, they've put us in a pickle, the federal. And they're not following the Constitution now. You think one paragraph is going to make them perk up their ears and say, oh, we got to do this. And I don't think a lot of people have understood the ramifications to this. I did a little bit of my own polling after seeing some of the polling questions out there, and people are all for a balanced budget. I think probably everybody in here would be for that. But when you look at $20 trillion, which I admit is a cliff, and it's in the windshield, it's coming. But if our interest rates go from 2.5% to 5%, all the money that we take in right now will go just for interest. And the ramifications of that to your constituents and to the people of Wyoming is we're going to have to double it, at least double, tax revenue just to pay for the things that we're currently paying for if all the money we're currently taking in goes to pay for interest. It gives me a lot of heartburn that this issue is not further discussed and the ramifications are not put out there so that the constituents understand. When I made my calls and I'd say, do you want a balanced budget? Oh, everybody wanted that. But when I said, do you want to double your taxes? It went to about zero. So the ramifications are huge to this, and there's a number of things that ought to be thought through to this. There's a reason that in 200 plus years, we've never had one. Our founders put it in there as a last-ditch effort, and I understand that there's a lot of you that will vote for this as a last-ditch effort. There are other options available, and there are safer vehicles in which to get our message across. So I urge your no vote.
Representative Lindholm.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. You know, if it were that easy to raise taxes, Congress would have done that instead of borrowing. But it's not that easy. So as the people will not tolerate it, and under a balanced budget amendment, that will likely be made even more of a difficult thing to do. So first of all, we need to understand the relationship between government and the people, taxing and spending. When government asks the people, do you want this or that service or benefit, the people many times say yes. When the people are then asked to pay for it, usually they quickly say no. People want government goodies as long as they can get them and don't have to pay for them. Since Congress can borrow as much as it likes, it's created a multitude of spending programs for which the people are not directly being taxed. Had the people been asked for a tax to pay for these programs, the answer would have been most often no. It is this cycle which must be stopped by a balanced budget amendment. Depending on the structure of the balanced budget amendment, there will likely be a phase-in period during which Congress can gradually get its financial house in order. Ironically, the current tax system has over the last 20 years provided an abundance of cash to the government. The problem is Congress has created more new government spending programs than the cash provided. However, the fear of a runaway taxing Congress is not to be ignored. Rather than trusting Congress, it is quite likely the proposed amendment will include a clause making it difficult to raise taxes and fees. Ratification of a balanced budget amendment will be extremely difficult without this provision, and frankly, a clause like that would accelerate the ratification process as the people will support it.
Representative Clem.
Well, I thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members, especially our new members who have not heard these arguments before, when we talk about convening an Article 5 convention, and I really want to get up here and just give a few thoughts and words exactly what an Article 5 convention is. When we talk about Article 5, we're talking about Article 5 in the U.S. Constitution. And in particular, we're talking about two ways that amendments can be brought forward and ratified and put into our Constitution. Now, there's a two-part process in Article 5. The first is, how do you propose an amendment? And our founders, in their brilliant wisdom, gave us two routes. They said Congress can go ahead and propose amendments by two-thirds of the votes of each chamber, or a convention of states can convene and propose those amendments. And in order for a convention of states to convene, there must be two-thirds of the states must call for the same application. So when we talk about the wording here in the bill, the wording is worded the way that it is because we're talking about a similar application that other states have already made. In fact, I'm certain some of our colleagues can have those numbers, there's actually been upwards of 570 different applications an Article 5 constitutional convention. Why hasn't there been a convention called with 570 applications put forward? Well, it's because you have to have at least two-thirds of the states or 34 similar applications calling for the same type of convention. So once you have that, two ways to propose amendments, either Congress or convention of the states, then once you have a convention of the states or Congress puts forward that proposed constitutional amendment, then Congress has the obligation to choose a route of ratification. And there are two routes of ratification. Now listen, if we were to propose a constitutional convention for the purpose of proposing an amendment to the Constitution, And it was outside of the scope of that application. So we're talking about a balanced budget amendment. But let's say the fear is you're going to have a runaway convention and they're going to rewrite the Constitution. And let's just say 34 states, and there, I believe there's 28 states who have now put forward this BBA application. But let's just say that of those 34 states, we get a convention of the states propose an amendment, and someone in a different state raises their hand or something, and they get up to a podium, and they want to start changing the Constitution in regards to the Second Amendment. You know what they would do? They would say point of order, and those 34 states could put a stop to it right then and there. But wait a second. You say, what if it keeps going and they let it go? Well, again, going back to the Constitution, Congress has the obligation to choose which route of ratification. If there's a proposed amendment that comes out of that convention of states that isn't in that narrow scope for which the application was called, then guess what? They have no obligation whatsoever to choose a route of ratification. And they don't have to put it to the states at all. And if they so chose, if they did, if they said, you know what, we're going to go ahead and put it out there anyway, then it's going to go to the Supreme Court. You see, our founders put in all these checks and balances so that we wouldn't abuse this authority. But friends, listen, this method, this convention of states has not been used ever once since the dawn of our Constitution. We're on the cusp of something great, and that, and it really is. I mean, we talk about our national debt. Folks, $20 trillion, we can't even fathom. But it's a lot of money, and it's going to catch up with us. And we just can't say, well, we're not going to raise taxes and we're not going to pay off that debt. We're just going to let it go in perpetuity. Friends, our country is going to implode from within. I'll just close with this last thing here, and I just want to give my perception here. This last summer, fall, we had a proposed mock convention. And this mock convention, there was delegates from every single state. In fact, it was myself and two other members in this body were able to go. And we were able to go to the East Coast, not going to name the state. And we were able to actually sit in this mock convention. And you know what? And it was a mock convention of states, what it would really be like. And we went there, and the mock convention was to focus on three different topics, one of them being a balanced budget amendment. And it's interesting. All of us got together, representation from every single state. And then you know what happened? Much like what's happening here when we have people out there in the fishbowl, all the staff that were involved with this great effort, the delegates sat, they convened, and none of the staff interfered. That body elected a president, that body elected rules, and then that body, we were separated into three different committees. Those three different committees selected their own chairman, they elected their own chairman. And I tell you what, if there was something that wasn't within the scope of what we were supposed to be talking about, you know what someone did? They raised a point of order. If I got up here and I started doing things that was out of order, one of you, in your great wisdom, would get up and say, point of order. And that's exactly what would happen at a convention of states. The founders were brilliant. I'm not asking you to trust other states, but I'm asking you to trust the founders and trust the process. It's the process that matters. It's the process that works. And dear friends, I saw that firsthand. I'm not worried about a runaway convention. If anything, I'd be hard-pressed to see an amendment actually get out of the convention. I think that would be more of a challenge. But a runaway convention, dear friends, that's just fear-mongering. And so with that, I think I've taken enough time. So thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Further discussion, Representative Winters.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just wanted to push back on something that was said earlier, talking about the subject of integrity. I do appreciate the discussion of integrity. Our founders, though, were not blind to human nature. And that was why they placed checks and balances throughout the Constitution. And one check and one balance that is often overlooked in this discussion, and it was highlighted in the papers that several of our founders wrote to help describe the Constitution, was that states have the duty to hold the federal government in check, in balance. And that is a compound government. In eighth grade civics, we often talk about the different branches of government, and I'm very appreciative of that. But many times what is overlooked in basic civics classes is the fact that not only are those three branches of government held at the federal level, there is also a compound government between the states and the federal government. So the question is, another statement that was made is there should be a safer vehicle or there is a safer vehicle. To be honest, Article 5 of the Constitution is the safe vehicle that the founders provided. It is the best way for us to move forward to a restoration of the kind of constitutional republic that we were designed to be.
Representative Freeman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm not speaking from a binder. I'm speaking from notes on the bill. And there's a couple of things that I would like you to consider as you make your decision. First of all, I think that you should realize that Congress has the ability to balance the budget already. There was a speaker from Georgia and a president from, one that has R in front of another state, and they balanced the budget and actually produced a surplus. Wyoming, I'm told, well, it used to be a balanced budget state, that we were already part of a coalition, and we backed out of it. And it's not hard to figure out why they backed out of it, because if we did have a balanced budget, and I'm not talking about raising taxes, I'm sitting up there thinking, well, if I was in the federal government, how would I balance the budget using Wyoming's resources? And there goes your federal lands, folks. And those school districts that are in other places that are dependent on payment in lieu of taxes, all of that's going to be gone too, because the federal government's largeness would be gone. And all the mineral royalties that the federal government collects in Wyoming, they give half of it back. What would happen to our state budget if all of a sudden those mineral royalties did not come back to the state of Wyoming and instead balanced the budget? The last convention that we had didn't turn out quite the way that it set up, because one of our great founding fathers basically said, we're in deep trouble. We have soldiers that wear red coats on the western part of the country in forts. We have countries that will not lend us money. They had a list of things that were going wrong, and they said to the Continental Congress, cross our hearts, we're only going to talk about alterations about trade to the in this constitutional convention. In fact, there's a convention. It became a constitutional convention. The bottom line, folks, is you can read whatever article you went to, but the most with what happens right now is for every dollar we sent, the highest I've seen is 17. I've seen as low as 10. Dollars comes back from Washington, D.C. What would happen if a balanced budget comes back to us that way? I have a degree in history, and I'm subject to making all sorts of what-ifs. But this country, after a war with another country at the turn of the century before, imposed balanced budgets on countries to the south of us, to where that they couldn't borrow money, they couldn't make money, and they had to have a balanced budget. And some of those countries have never recovered. And one of those countries that's noted for their cigars finally allowed a person who had a beard to take over to bring order to its country. I just can't see any reasons why a balanced budget would be good for Wyoming. I've read about a convention that happened this summer. I don't know if it was the same one. But when that convention ended, it had more than just a balanced budget. It had judicial reform and other social reforms that were attached to it. Wyoming used to be a balanced budget state. It saw what the consequences were, and I would suggest that we use the tools, or the Congress uses the tools, to balance the budget with what the powers have already been given to the national government. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative. Representative Clam.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I appreciate my colleague in pushing back against this. And I would just offer a little pushback myself and just ask this body. It sounded as if they was making the argument that it's good to have debt, that it's good not to have a balanced budget. That we can go on and just adding on to the debt and nothing is going to happen and everything is going to be hunky-dory. Let me ask this body this, and it's more of a question, you know, don't answer, of course, you can't, but just answer within your own mind. Do you trust Congress to rein itself in? You know, the argument's made that, well, we just need to follow the Constitution. We just need to elect good people to follow the Constitution. Let me ask you this. If you're of that philosophy, how many election cycles is that going to take until you feel that they're going to follow the Constitution? And in that amount of time that it takes, what's going to happen to the national debt? And do you think Congress is going to rein itself in? The argument, again, is made, well, we just need to follow the Constitution. Our representatives that we elect, our senators, they just need to follow the Constitution. And I would argue that they are according to what the Supreme Court has dictated. Now, the Supreme Court has ruled over and over again on certain provisions, certain articles within the Constitution, and ruled that Congress is either within its means to act or is without its means to act. And many feel, me personally, that they've gone beyond the scope, that the judicial branch is out of control. Dear friends, I'm not worried again about a runaway convention. I'm worried about a runaway Congress. I'm worried about a runaway executive. I'm worried about a runaway judicial branch. And do you think for a moment that those federal branches, those three right there, or going to rein themselves in? Well, they haven't. Many of you, your whole lifetime, you haven't seen that happen. And so the framers in their brilliance put within our own Constitution Article 5 and said the states can put our federal government in check by proposing a convention of states to propose constitutional amendments. And dear friends, that's what we're talking about here, and I would encourage your aye vote on this.
Okay, Representative Edwards.
Yes, thank you, Chairman. If you look on page 2, line 5, you will notice that it says absence of a national emergency. This country has been in a national emergency since we had a president from the Peach State. Every president after him has signed this national emergency. I don't know when that's going to stop, but this bill will not stop it with what the language is in it. We have been under a national emergency, and I don't know if the incoming president will get rid of it or not. You've already left a hole open in that. We have a Congress that since the president that's now holding office, except for the first 2 years, has been under the Elephant Party, and they had control of the House of Representatives for 6 of those 8 years. They control the budget. They refused to do anything with that. They let him do what he wanted to. In the first 2 years, they had the party of the donkeys in there that controlled all three bodies. In those 2 years, they could have balanced the budget if they chose to. They have not, and this is not a call for a constitutional convention. I am totally opposed to this bill and any call for a constitutional convention. The amendments that we've had after the 10th Amendment, I think, were not needed. But our citizens and legislature thought it within their wisdom to bring them on, including the 16th Amendment, which I'm sure you all enjoy. Us, with a constitutional convention, there are a lot of things, and I'm not going to name them all. If you want to have a balanced budget, the best thing you can do is call up your representatives and senators and tell them not to increase the national debt. It will happen immediately. It will happen immediately. They cannot go above what they are allowed to borrow. They will have to live in their means, and you won't have to worry about your taxes going up because they're scared to death, so they sneak it through and steal the money out of your bank account. I hope that you will oppose H.J. 2. Thank you.
Representative Winters.
Thank you. And I'm not going to belabor the point. I just want to make a quick point. There have been multiple calls toward individuals who are in our federal capital to not increase the national debt. I think it would be an understatement to say that that has not worked. And it's not for a lack of trying. There are several that have tried to get us to address the issue many, many times. In the 1990s, as was already mentioned before, there was a chief executive of one party and a speaker of the lower house of the federal legislature that did work together. And they were briefly able to balance the budget. But you look at where we are again, and you have to ask the question, why are we doing what we're doing? We're doing this because it must be within the Constitution. If it's simply within statute, statute can be changed over time. But if it's in the Constitution, it makes a lot more sense. And there have been tremendous proposals that would not raise taxes, that would allow us to move forward in the right direction. And one of our own representatives in the upper house of the federal legislature has proposed for many years in a row a penny plan that would accomplish that within a specified length of time. And so sometimes what we do is we talk about these things as though it will happen immediately and there will be a massive fiscal cliff that will occur. That is not true. There will be a plan for this to happen, and many wonderful plans have been proposed. And so I would just want to reiterate again why this needs to be an amendment to the Constitution and not just in statute. With that, thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Representative Halverson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Debates about the wisdom of a balanced budget amendment or not, one of my largest problems with this is that Congress will call the convention. And someone earlier spoke eloquently on the inability of Congress to restrain itself. If I do not believe that Congress will be restrained to a simple call. I think Congress has demonstrated their ability to exceed those mandates imposed upon them by the Constitution, and will start issuing more than just a call. For example, I am not assured that any call for a constitution will not be accompanied by the number of votes per state. Everyone talks about one state, one vote. I am not assured on that subject. I think Congress, especially if there's a call for a convention that might include term limits, I don't think Congress is going to be restrained by commenting or dictating other aspects of a convention above and beyond what they're supposed to do in Article 5. I do not believe that Congress will restrain itself in naming the number of delegates per state and who shall be delegates. So many people that I've talked to about this, constitutional lawyers, they say that Article 5 is the black hole of the Constitution. It has never been done. People who assure us it will be one state, one vote, really only have that as a desire and cannot really convincingly assure us that Congress will not step in and change that. As long as Congress is in charge of the call, they will be in charge of dictating terms of the convention, some of which may not be favorable to small states, states with one at-large member of the House. So I would just caution us, vote no on this until we get some sense of what Congress intends to do in its, quote, call, unquote. Please vote no.
Great. Any further discussion? Question? Yeah. Representative Hallinan.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would like to respond to my colleague from Campbell, from the home of the camels, that he's a big fan of the 10th Amendment. Well, no one is a bigger fan of the 10th Amendment than I am. And the 10th Amendment is totally ineffective, according to our Supreme Court. It's not even listed, or it's not even discussed when that issue is brought up in a court case. So that actually goes along with my other colleague from the home of the camels, who said that the Supreme Court has been remiss in following the Constitution, and that we need to ask the states to bring the courts and the Congress back under the control of the people. And that's my reason for saying that we need to vote yes on this bill. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Is there any further discussion? All right. Question having been called, all those in favor of Chairman Kirkbride's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that House Joint Resolution number 2 do pass, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Okay, the chair was probably in doubt anyway, but the division also having been called, those in favor, please stand. Those opposed? Thank you. Those opposed? Fewer than 37. House Joint Resolution number 2 has passed Committee of the Whole. We are on to House Joint Resolution number 3. The reading clerk will read the bill.
House Joint Resolution number 3, introduced by Representative Larson. Single Subject Amendment Resolution. A joint resolution requesting Congress to call a convention for the purpose of proposing an amendment to the Constitution of the United States to require that every law enacted by Congress shall embrace only one subject, which shall be clearly expressed in its title. Mr. Chairman, your committee number 1, Judiciary, to whom was referred House Joint Resolution 3, Single Subject Amendment Resolution, respectfully reports same back to the House with the recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Representatives Biteman, Kirkbride, Olson, Ponell, Winters. Noes, Representatives Baker, Jennings, Pelkey, Salazar. Representative Kirkbride, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Chairman Kirkbride?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that House Joint Resolution 3 do pass, and for the explanation, I turn it over to our favorite panther from House District 25.
Okay, Representative Larson, Dan.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm going to hopefully be short with this one, and we'll see what comes of it. The time has come to add another amendment to this U.S. Constitution. 41 state constitutions prohibit the use of riders in state legislation, but a single subject requirement applicable to federal legislation is missing in the U.S. Constitution. Adoption of this amendment would have a profound and positive impact on the way Congress conducts its business. A federal single subject amendment would provide the means to limit pork barrel spending, control the phenomenon of legislating through riders, limit omnibus legislation produced by log rolling, prevent public surprise, and increase the institutional accountability of Congress and its members. Congress will be able to conduct its business in more productive, efficient, transparent, and less acrimonious way with a single subject requirement. In the past Congress, federal legislation was introduced proposing a single subject amendment to the U.S. Constitution. This will again be brought forward. They will not act on that bill until enough states propose on this subject. Let's have our state be on the list of those requiring this. I encourage you to vote for House Resolution 3.
Any further discussion? Representative Winters.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I just wanted to cover one topic, and this is for Article 5 bills in general. You're going to see a few of them throughout the course of this session. And they are not in competition with one another, and I don't want you to think that this bill is in competition with the previous bill. There will be another one in the near-term future as well, and all of them do work together. And so in each of these situations, what we're looking to do is to make sure that these very important topics are brought up for consideration at the federal level. And so just wanted to cover that. Thank you.
Any further discussion? Further discussion? Question having been called, all those in favor of Chairman Kirkbride's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that House Joint Resolution Number 3 do pass, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no.
No.
House Joint Resolution Number 3 has passed the Committee of the Whole. We are on. The next bill for consideration is House Bill 21. The reading clerk will read the bill.
House Bill 21, introduced by Corporations, Elections, and Political Subdivisions. Secretary of State Certificates of Authentication. An act relating to certificates of authentication. Mr. Chairman, your committee number 7, Corporations, Elections, and Political Subdivisions, to whom was referred House Bill 21, Secretary of State Certificates of Authentication, respectfully reports same back to the House with the recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Representatives Blackburn, Byrd, Edwards, Ayer, Furphy, Lindholm, Lone, Sweeney, and Zwanitzer. Signed, Chairman Zwanitzer.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Chairman Zwanitzer?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move when the Committee of the Whole rise to report it do so with the recommendation that House Bill 21 do pass. And in keeping with today's tradition, I'll turn it over to the good Eagle to floor manage the bill.
Representative Ayer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. One of the great things about being a new legislator is that you get to be exposed and learn about a lot of new things that you never were exposed to before. And today I rise to speak about one of those topics. Authentication of documents is a process that the Secretary of State's office has been handling. They actually issue two types of certificates of authentication. For countries who have joined an international treaty of The Hague and became part of that treaty, they issue what is called an apostille. For those who are not signers of the International Treaty of The Hague, certificates of authentication are used. These documents are attached to documents generated within the state of Wyoming to certify authentication when dealing with foreign countries. Foreign adoptions require a number of documents that have to be certified. Visa requirements, which require a background check, have to be authenticated. Birth certificates, death certificates, marriage licenses, and so on.
With that brief introduction, what I'd like to do is go and talk about the bill itself, HB 21. Starting with page 1, line 13, we create a new subsection A, which provides for the authority of the Secretary of State to issue certificates of authentication and apostilles. On page 2, line 5, we have a new section B, which allows the Secretary of State as a custodian of the Great Seal to affix the Great Seal to certificates and apostilles. Page 2, line 8, a new section C provides authority for the Secretary of the State to collect a fee of $10 for each certificate. I might just mention that fee of $10 is about the mid-range of what other states charge. The range is from $1 to $40. And the $10 also is a pretty fair estimate of what it costs the Secretary of State's office to provide these certificates. One thing that's really interesting, they attach these certificates to the document they are certifying by a metal rivet or a grommet that is pretty much tamper-proof, and so there are some extra costs. They also cap the total for any one transaction at $100. In the case of adoption, sometimes there are several documents, and if you have more than 10, then you only have to pay the $100 fee. On page 2, line 19, and continuing on page 3, line 1, the bill creates a new subsection E, providing specific authority for the Secretary of State to affix the Great Seal to certificates and apostilles. On page 3, line 5, the bill amends 9-1-305AI, which provides for the $10 authentication fee. Finally, on page 3, line 13, section 3 provides making the bill effective upon completion of all acts necessary for the bill to become law. Are there any questions?
Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Folks, I just wanted to have a chance to get up because in my fifth session in office, this is the first time a bill actually ever came up that had anything to do with my day job. And so I'm just really excited to stand up here and say that this is a real thing and it's a great bill and you should all vote aye.
Further discussion, question having been called, all those in favor of Chairman Dwanis' motion that when the Committee of the Whole rise to report it, do so with the recommendation that House Bill 21 do pass, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. House Bill 21 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for consideration is House Bill 22. The reading clerk will please read the bill.
House Bill 22, introduced by Corporations, Elections, and Political Subdivisions, Business Entities Communications Contact, an act relating to business entities. Mr. Chairman, your committee number 7, Corporations, Elections, and Political Subdivisions, to whom was referred House Bill 22, Business Entities Communications Contact, respectfully reports same back to the House with the recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Representatives Blackburn, Byrd, Edwards, Ayer, Furphy, Lindholm, Lone, Sweeney, Zwanitzer. Signed, Chairman Zwanitzer.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Chairman Zwanitzer?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move when the Committee of the Whole rise to report it, do so with a recommendation that House Bill 22 do pass. And there are no standing committee amendments, and I would turn it over to the good plainsman from District 14.
Representative Fofi.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would like to explain the purpose of this bill and then go through the changes proposed. In 2007, the Registered Office and Agents Act was passed, which requires certain information be kept by the registered agent and gives the Secretary of State's office audit authority to ensure this information is kept. So when law enforcement calls the Secretary of State and needs to know the people behind a company, The Secretary of State's office can get that information from the registered agent This is not public information, it is kept secret. So if you would turn to the bill, the first change is on page 1, line 14, line out business and put in mailing address and add physical address. So in the past, often all that was supplied was a post office box. That is not appropriate. Some of these registered agents handle up to 7,000 companies. So we need physical address required on these companies. If you turn to page 2, we need to identify a natural person, and what is lined out is being changed to, and on line 5 is added, the designated communications contact for the entity shall be the entity's either director, officer, limited liability company member or manager, or a managing partner, trustee, or employee of the company. Now, the employee cannot be the registered agent. It has to be separate. If you turn to page 3, the duties of the registered agent, again, in section B on line 14, we need physical address, and we need to have the contact information provided to the Secretary of State's office. With those changes, Mr. Chairman, I recommend approval of the bill.
Thank you very much, Representative. Are there any questions? Chairman Greer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just real quick on this, and I understand the purpose behind this legislation, and I agree with it. I just have a difficulty. I serve in a capacity as a registered agent, and I still have a handful of clients that I have to. The physical address is to drive down the Knollwood River and hang a right and drive another few miles over. They just most of them now have a fire number out front of the turnoff, but I just have a little bit of concern on being in compliance with this. And one of my goals when I leave here is make sure I don't leave here a criminal. You'll hear me say that over and over again. So I just was wondering if the committee had discussed that issue, if we're comfortable that every business out there has a physical address. And I go a little bit a step further. I have several business entities myself, I don't really have a physical address because I kind of move around between the ranch and my house and my office and my other office and down here. And some of the work that I do in those LLCs are legitimate work, but I guess I just... basically... I stand corrected. They're legitimate enterprises. And I guess I could give my house as that address, but anyway, I just was wondering if you had any discussion. I understand the backing behind, or the reason behind this is to bring some legitimacy to our business entities.
Representative Murphy.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Once again, this is federal register law. The Registered Offices and Agents Act requires this. Now, the registered agent just has to keep the physical address on file so that the Secretary of State could get a hold of the registered agent and verify they have the physical address. But by law, you have to have a physical address I think it's under some of the Secrecy Act laws, et cetera. Hope that answers the question.
Chairman Duaniser.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Exactly what the former speaker said. Just to remind, this is only on the communications contact. So we're not talking about the entity itself and what its address is, but you, whichever human being is serving as a communications contact, do have to provide an actual physical address. If you do not have one, I suppose you better not be the communications contact for that entity.
Any further discussion? Any further discussion? All right, question having been called. All those in favor of Chairman Duaniser's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that House Bill 22 do pass, please say aye. Those opposed, no. House Bill 22 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for consideration is House Bill 103. The reading clerk will read the bill.
House Bill 103, introduced by Representative Schwartz, Housing Authority, an act relating to municipalities and counties. Mr. Chairman, your committee number 7, Corporations, Elections, and Political Subdivisions, to whom was referred House Bill 103, Housing Authority, respectfully reports same back to the House with the recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Representatives Blackburn, Byrd, Edwards, Ayer, Furphy, Lindholm, Lone, Sweeney, Zwanitzer. Signed, Chairman Zwanitzer.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Chairman Zwanitzer?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move when the Committee of the Whole rise to report it do so with the recommendation that House Bill 103 do pass. There are no standing committee amendments, and I did not have time to see what the mascot of the good northwestern county in the state is, but maybe that question will be answered along with the sponsorship of the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Go ahead.
We are the Bronx. I think we share that with others. So this bill is regarding housing authorities and housing projects, neither of which are terms I love, but they do apply to the subject at hand. So the purpose of housing authorities is in situations where low-income people cannot afford housing without some form of public subsidy. That is the case in many counties in our proud state. There are many housing authorities in our proud state. The purpose of this bill is to create local options in how this statute is used. So where are we? You all received a handout from the Association of Realtors. If you've got that in front of you, that actually sums it up pretty well. But essentially what we're talking about, and I'll go to the bill to explain it, if you turn to page 2, lines 6 through 11, you will see that there are powers that are automatically, delegated to the authority by the elected officials that create it. It is the purpose of this bill to turn that shall to a may so that the elected officials can hold on to certain powers as they see fit. An example of this would be, for instance, the purchase of land. In the county in which I reside, land prices have become rather high, and it is felt that to allow an appointed board to make decisions that involve a significant amount of taxpayers' money would be inappropriate, and that that authority should lie with elected officials. So that's on page 2. If you then make sure I know where I am. On page 3, we then have references to that change, which continue the county option or regional option, whatever the case is, or municipal option. The second part of this bill occurs on page 4, and the way the original statute was structured, if a county created an authority, they could have 5 members. And if a town created an authority, they could have 5. But a regional authority which only had one municipality, which occurs in the county in which I reside. They may only have three members. Three is a difficult number. It doesn't provide for a breadth of expertise to be appointed to the board, and it also means that if two of those members are having a conversation on subject matter, that would constitute a quorum and would require an official meeting. There is one other minor issue on page 5, line 6, that I am pursuing with LSO that might require an amendment, but it's fairly minor, and I will come back on second reading if it needs to be fixed. That is, in essence, the bill. I welcome any questions and request your support.
Questions on the bill? Discussion on the bill? Chairman Northrup.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So my question is this going to solve the community in the northwest of the Great Ski Slopes? Is it going to solve their housing problem?
Representative Schwartz.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and Mr. Chairman. Nothing will solve that problem, but it will give us one more tool to alleviate it.
Any further discussion? All right, question having been called, all those in favor of Chairman Dwanser's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rise to report and do so with the recommendation that House Bill 103 do pass, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, say no. House Bill 103 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for consideration is House Bill 35. The reading clerk will read the bill.
House Bill 35, introduced by Management Council. Sponsorship of Legislation, an act relating to the legislature. Mr. Chairman, your committee number 12, Rules and Procedures, to whom was referred House Bill 35, Sponsorship of Legislation, respectfully reports same back to the House with the recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Representatives Burkhart, Connolly, Greer, Harshman, Larson, Madden, Miller, Nicholas, Northrup, Helke, Summers, Walters, Wilson. Signed, Representative Harshman, Chairman.
You have heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Speaker Harshman?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with a recommendation that House Bill 35 do pass, and I would turn the explanation of the bill over to the Chairman of Minerals. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Chairman Greer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We'll explain House Bill 35 briefly. No, I won't. I'll just go into great detail for you. Now, what this does is codify some things that are already in statute and then also a policy of management council to ensure that we're consistent as we roll through different management councils from year to year. And what this is doing is it's clearly saying that unless a statute provides that a select committee will not be able to sponsor legislation. So a little background on this is we do have select committees out there that are statutorily authorized to bring their own legislation. We have some existing select committees that do not have that clear authorization in statute. And what we're saying is that if you do not have clear authorization in statute, you cannot sponsor a bill. You will need, that select committee will need to take it to a standing committee. So this came up just this year with our Technology and Process Committee was asking whether or not they could sponsor legislation. And this discussion came up. I held fast to the position that no, they cannot. That legislation must come back to Management Council, who, by the way, controls that budget as part of the legislature's overall budget, only appropriate. So that is the legislation that came through. It does not affect any of the standing committees. Their authority does not affect, obviously, any authority of the individual legislators. I think I'm anticipating a question, which I'd love to discuss. So with that, I'll just step back and take any questions.
Any further discussion? Oh, Representative Steinmetz.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a question on page 2,
line 7 during a legislative session. And so I was just wanting to be clear if that is during the session that the joint rules are passed or if that extends to another session. I was wondering about binding another legislature to the rules we pass during our session. So if you could answer that, I'd appreciate it. Thank you.
Chairman Greer.
Mr. Chairman, great question. Great question. And so we discussed this particular issue, Management Council did at length. The first draft came back to allow the individual houses to have a rule, so a rule from our house or a rule from the other chamber to allow a select committee to do this. We went back and forth time and time on this matter, saying that was a waste of time, quite frankly. And so what came out of that was that it could be a joint rule, which is nearly impossible to get, and then that limitation for that session. Keeping in mind, each time we change a rule during a session, it becomes a temporary rule. And then at the beginning of the next legislature, those rules come in, and unless we make that change, they become permanent rules. So you'd have to be aware of that particular fact. So earlier, it was earlier this week when we voted to adopt the temporary rules. They became our permanent rules. So there's a way that could slide in, but we have the opportunity to catch it. So hopefully that answers that question.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Any further discussion? Chairman's monitor.
Thanks, Mr. Chairman. If I could also answer that question, that's the exact reason you're putting it in a statute and not making it a rule, is because in statute you are binding the future like we do in all statutes until that statute gets changed.
All right, thank you. Any further discussion? Representative Larson. Lloyd.
Alt task. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I guess the question I had is, as you look through and see some of the select committees, they're assigned to multiple, they have to report to multiple other committees. Is the thought then that the select committees will be assigned to report to a specific committee moving forward, or is that going to be an arbitrary thing that will be decided each year?
Chairman Greer?
Well, Mr. Chairman, I seriously doubt it would be arbitrary. but that's exactly right. And I think most everybody in this body knows my position on select committees, so I'm trying to help here rein this in just a little bit. But that's exactly right. I think we need to stand. We've got a couple that this really does apply to. The one I had already mentioned and the tribal liaison committee is another. And so what we look at, and this has happened several times now since I've been here, is Management Council will set up a select committee. And so Management Council is putting a statutory restriction on itself in this with this legislation. So that's what I'm looking at. To answer that question there is we need to move away from being arbitrary on anything and say that this committee will, or this select committee will report to another committee. Sometimes it's very obvious who they should report to. The other option is that we help kind of idle back or rein in select committees, but that's another discussion.
Chairman Bolo.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So I have two questions on this. The first is, the first line on page 2 talks about committees comprised of members of both houses of legislature. So I don't know the instance, but you could certainly see the case where a single house's committee could sponsor legislation. That argument could be made by that language. The second part I would say is the explicit authorization in line 5. It's actually talking about the authorization of the select committee, not the authorization they have whether to or not be precluded or be allowed to sponsor legislation. So I think there actually is some clarity that still needs to be gained in this if I understand what the intent is. Because what this says to me is if a select committee all of them would be allowed to introduce the legislation if they are authorized in statute, just strictly authorized, not that the fact that they were authorized to actually introduce the legislation. I think that's actually what you're trying to get to. So I think there's a little bit of clarity that still needs to be gained in this, at least from my perspective as I read it. One, on the two-house issue, and two, on what is being authorized, the committee or the committee's ability to author and introduce legislation. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Chairman Greer.
Mr. Chairman, and before the last representative sits down, I'm going to have him go over his first question again. I couldn't hear it. So to the second question on that, and I'm not seeing that being unclear. If we have a statute, and I can think of the Select Committee, Select Natural Resource Committee, it is expressly authorized in statute that they can sponsor legislation. That's what we're talking about. I think our Select Committee on Education has that same authority. And I'm sorry, I did not hear your first question clearly.
Representative Gray.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Can you give us some idea of what percentage of Select Committees are currently explicitly authorized in statute to introduce legislation?
Chairman Gray.
Mr. Chairman, no, I cannot. I don't have that breakdown. Sorry.
Is there any further discussion, Representative Gray?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd say that I think that's pivotal to this piece of legislation, because moving forward with our issues in education, the talk about a super committee, I think we need to understand where we're at with current select committees and what this has to do with the future potentially, because there's been a lot of talk about that. So,
Speaker Hoseman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think, first of all, the question from the representative from the center of the state, you can go on your LSO website right now, go to committee activities, and you can pull up all the standing committees and all the select committees. Now, let's go back to the beginning of what this bill is doing. What it really is doing is putting a limit on the power of management council. So management council in the interim cannot form its own task force to go out and then bring legislation as a task force. That's really the heart of the bill and brings us. We have several select committees that, you know, select water, select school facilities, that we have been long-standing committees that do in fact bring legislation and then run them through a standing committee. So those things are not, that's not the intent of this bill. It's really more to get control of this and not have particularly management council going out and forming task forces that then will bring up legislation. And so really, I'd stand for any questions, but that's really the intent of the bill. Thank you.
Chairman Northrup.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. In your inbox is an amendment to House Bill 40, and as you look through that, you will see that the, as on line 28, it says that the Joint Education Committee has already decided to do away with one of the select committees. So we're whittling them down in our committee.
Mr. Chairman, quickly, could you clarify that was for House Bill 35 or for 40?
I'm talking about the general about the whole that there's lots of select committees out there and that we're trying to get rid of them. So,
thank you. My apologies. I wasn't clear on that. Madam Minority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd also like to add that one of the issues that was talked about in the committee was the desire for select committees to work quicker and faster during the interim. And that was important because when they had draft legislation, that needed to be able to go to a standing committee so that they could hear it and act on it in a meaningful way. So I think one of the chairs of a standing committee talked about getting 6 or 8 bills for a November meeting from a select committee and how he didn't know about that, and it really kind of gummed up the process for that standing committee. So this provision also kind of tells us kind of management-wise how we will operate in terms of our interim committee work, so that select committees will meet immediately, start that work, and then hand over their draft legislation to the standing interim committee. And that made sense to me. So I'm in favor.
Chairman Barlow.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So I don't know that the questions I had were answered, and that's fine. I also think there's another conflict with subsection C of this section, which talks about the management council having the right to appoint a select committee of not less than so many members to carry out duties of interim committees. So I'm not sure if there's not a conflict in that, with if the intent is to hold back on what management council can do, then this section probably needs to be addressed as well. If it's outside, or maybe they think this one actually rolls into C, but it needs to reference C if that's what we're trying to do, because this gives specific authority to management council to carry out a special committee in the event that a committee is not actually performing its duties. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Any further discussion? Any further discussion? But just 1 second. Chairman Greer, do you want to respond to it? Go ahead.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I will respond to that. And that would give the management council has the ability to take any topic or any subject and move it over to another committee in that situation. That is a hammer for management council to make sure that those interim committees are following their topics and going through with them. So that's I don't see it's particularly in conflict with it, but I'll look at it a little bit further. But I'd encourage you to move this forward. Again, I think as the speaker said, this was a limitation that management council is putting on itself to keep it from setting up committees, in my estimation, to circumvent our standing committee process.
Okay, thank you. Any further discussion? Question having been called, all those in favor of all those in favor of Speaker Hirschman's motion, the one the Committee of the Whole rises to report, to do so with the recommendation that House Bill 35 do pass, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no.
No.
House Bill 35 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for consideration is House Bill 26. The reading clerk will read the bill.
House Bill 26, introduced by Agriculture, State and Public Lands, and Water Resources. Bark Beetle Program Funding, an act relating to state lands. Mr. Chairman, your committee number 2, Appropriations, to whom was referred House Bill 26, Bark Beetle Program Funding, respectfully reports same back to the House with the recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Representatives Burkhart, Larson, Schwartz, Summers, Walters, Wilson. Noes, Representative Nicholas. Signed, Representative Nicholas, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Chairman McKim?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the committee of the whole rises to report, it does so with the recommendation that House Bill 26 do pass, and I turn the explanation of the bill over to the good representative from House District 1, and it also has a committee of the whole amendment, which will be explained by our representative from House District 5.
Okay. Can we move the amendment?
Actually. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move it to... we move the committee amendment 001 to House Bill 26.
All righty. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you.
Okay. I will we'll have the explanation of the amendment to the representative from District 5, Representative Steinmetz.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm totally in support of this bill. However, when we were in committee, we had some concerns from the chiefs who fight fire, and so we decided to put a sunset date in. So on page 2, line 11, after agency, we're just going to insert the sunset date. And that's just so that we revisit this. Traditionally, we have appropriated this in the budget bill. And since we're making it permanent, they just want to make sure it's working correctly because it's coming out of the fire suppression account. And so that was our fix for that. And I hope that you will vote for it. Thank you.
And thank you, Representative Steinmetz. And my apologies. I should have let the good representative from District 1 probably explain the full bill first. But anyway, we'll jump back to that. So Representative Lindholm.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members of the 64th, I bring to you House Bill number 26, Park Beetle Funding. This is a position that was studied by, thank you, Representative. This is an issue that was studied by your Agriculture Committee over the interim. And specifically, it was studied because, for those of you that are new to the legislature, this is something that we run in our as a budget amendment every year to create this program and fund this program. And we've decided that because bark beetles aren't going away, that we will put this into statute so that it can be used as long as it needs to be used. There is an amendment that does sunset it. But going into the legislation, you can see it starts on 36.1402 on page 1, line 14. So what we're doing is we're taking $500,000, and that $500,000 shall only be expended from the emergency fire suppression account, which is county dollars into that account. It's voluntary to enter into that program, and that's only if it's not a real bad fire season. We left this up to the big guy, so the big guy can determine whether or not he can get with his Division of Forestry and determine whether or not those funds should be available or not. You can see that by July 1st, that determination has to be made. As a volunteer firefighter, I'm a wildland guy. By July 1st, we know whether or not we're going to have a real bad summer or not. So with that, it's $500,000. Which is half. This is a 50% cut from what we normally have done in years past for this program. So this is a 50% cut. It's only upon the approval of the governor. It's only on the wet years. And that way, this program can survive. We can keep moving forward, and that way, our dollars aren't wasted that we've expended throughout the years in this bark beetle mitigation, so that bark beetles don't actually come back in areas where we've controlled them. And with that, I think I've got questions, and I'll stand for them.
Chairman Duanitzu.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And this has been a great program for the past 2 or 3 years that we continually in the budget have appropriated funds for. And not that I'm opposing or in favor of it, but just some questions and maybe some history for the body. The fire suppression account is an account that all of the counties pay into to fight forest fires. It's basically an insurance account, right? They each pay into it, and depending where the fire is in that season, you can expend funds unless it gets really out of control and you get some federal dollars to fight fires. And so that's been the purpose of the EFSA for, I guess, as long as I've been here and probably way before then. And so what we've done the last couple of years is take some money out of this to be proactive, which is great, to do bark beetle mitigation. I guess my question would be, do all counties equally benefit because are they all affected by the bark beetle and perhaps economically the whole state is?
Mr. Chairman, point of order.
I'll state your point.
Mr. Chairman, we are debating the amendment on the floor, or are we debating the bill at this time?
Mr. Representative Brown, that's a good point. Let me think about that. I don't believe that we first adopted the amendment to the bill. So thank you for pointing that out. I was remiss. Before we get back into the debate, we are on committee number committee of the whole amendment number 1 to the bill. And so all those in favor of unless there is any further discussion on that, and okay, there is, Representative Lindholm, please go.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And just for clarification on the amendment, this comes to you because there was some concern that we don't want this program to go on forever if we get to a point where we no longer need this bark beetle mitigation, or the fund gets down too low, we'll have an automatic revisit because of this expiration. So on in favor of the amendment.
Okay, any further discussion to the amendment? Seeing none, question on Committee of the Whole, Amendment Number 1 to House Bill 26, please say aye. Those opposed, no. Committee of the Whole, Amendment Number 1 has been adopted. We are now back on the bill. Once again, thank you, Representative Brown, for making that, for pointing that out. And I will go back to Representative Lindholm.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So, bark beetle mitigation, what does that look like, and why are we using emergency fire suppression account money? So the emergency fire suppression account money, well, first of all, the good chairman of the Corporations Committee brought up to all counties benefit. Not all counties, see, the way this program works is you actually have to put in to receive those funds, which means you've got to have a bark beetle project somewhere in your county. So far, 11 counties have benefited from this program. From my corner of the state all the way down to the corner of the state where I can't remember the house district, opposite corner of the state. There you go, Mr. Chairman. So we've been able to use that money for mitigation products. So what does mitigation look like? Mitigation, when we're talking about bark beetle, has two aspects that are pretty important. Number one that we look for is we try to get these logs to a timber mill. And the purpose of that is if we can get them to a timber mill, it costs the state a heck of a lot less money. And we've got an added value product that can be used at that point, and we're creating jobs. Number two, if we can't get those logs to a mill, then we cut and chunk. And why we cut and chunk, and we cut and chunk during a certain time of the year only, is so that those when we can't get them hauled out of there, those logs are cut and chunked, rolled down to the bottom of the hill where the sun can hit them, and that's what kills those beetles. This program has taken your average expansion of 6 times. So one tree gets infected, that bark beetle tree is now going to spread to 6 trees and so forth and so on, and you can see how that could populate a forest pretty quick, and hence why some of the issues we see throughout the state. We've taken that down into the hills that are black down to about 1.2. So the program's been extremely successful, and folks, this is what taking care of your public lands looks like. So on and in favor, I'll stand for any questions.
Representative Paxton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I think maybe it's worth our time to think a little bit about exactly how this is implemented in certain areas. In the county in which I reside, on the other side of the mountains with a lot of snow and next to the mountains that are high mother mountains, we have a considerable problem with the beetle kill. And we have land that's both managed by the federal organization that manages mostly lowlands and the federal organization that manages mostly trees. The federal organization that manages mostly lowlands does not have a person available to lay out timber sales, and yet they have timber that has been infested with beetle that needed to be laid out and sold. So what we did was we hired a person, a retired forester, through the state forester's office that was capable of going in and laying out those timber sales. He managed to get that done. And as a result of that, our sawmill in that valley was able to utilize that timber early in the year when because it's lower in elevation, and we're able to extend their season of hauling logs in and kept 200 people employed. So it's a pay me now or pay me later situation, and we chose to do the former. So
thank you. Is there any further discussion? Madam Minority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I've got a couple of questions for the vertically enhanced presenter of the bill. I'm curious about one of the statements that you made, that this was half the amount that was in the budget bill. And having pulled out the budget bill from last year, it has $1 million then being split in the biennium, so $500,000 a year. And so to me, that seems to be exactly what you're talking about going into the future. So a little bit of clarification on that. And then my second question is about the money and the expectation of where the money will come from the future. So again, right now it's coming out of State Lands and Investments, the Forestry Division, with a very specific footnote. And it appears that what you're saying, and tell me if this is true, that you are saying for at least the next biennium or biennium and a half that this bill would cause that footnote to carry over into the next budget. Is that what you're doing, or tell us how you're impacting the budget of state lands?
Representative Lindholm.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So first, I should have been more specific. Traditionally, the $1 million that's been here for this program was not the last biennium. Traditionally, it was for the years before. They were spending $1 million a year. So I should have been more specific. I apologize for that. We decided to go with the 50% cut to the program after promptly falling on my face with $1 million during the last budget session. We cut that back to 50% as we thought was prudent, and the body agreed. In regard to what we're looking at and how this affects the budget going forward, this is just for the emergency fire suppression account. So in regards to that, as soon as this goes into effect, this is only if the government deems. Whereas before, on the footnote from the budget, I believe that's a shall use. Whereas this is a may use, depending on the year. You can correct me if I'm wrong, and I have to look at my session law.
Madam Minority Floor Leader. Oh, okay, you're good. All right, any further discussion on the bill? Question having been called. Thank you. All those in favor of Chairman McKim's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that House Bill 26 do pass, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. House Bill 26 has passed the Committee of the Whole. Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Mr. Chairman, I move that the Committee of the Whole rise and report.
You have heard the motion. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. I'm a little rusty up here. Yeah. Okay. Stand by. At ease.
The reading clerk will read the Committee of the Whole report.
Mr. Speaker, our Committee of the Whole, having under consideration bills on general file, beg leave to report as filed. House Bill 63, recommended do pass. House Bill 27, recommended do pass. House Bill 39, recommended do pass. House Joint Resolution 2, recommended do pass. House Joint Resolution 3, recommended do pass. House Bill 21, recommended do pass. House Bill 22, recommended do pass. House Bill 103, recommended do pass. House Bill 35, recommended do pass. House Bill 26, amended, recommended do pass. Chairman Hunt.
Mr. Speaker, I move the adoption of the Committee of the Whole report.
You've heard the motion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed say no. Congratulations, Representative Hunt.
This and okay.
Right, that order of business, reports from standing committees.
House Bill 15, introduced by Judiciary, Sex Offender Registration Fees and Penalties, an act relating to sex offender registration. Mr. Speaker, your committee number one, Judiciary, to whom was referred House Bill 15, Sex Offender Registration Fees and Penalties, respectfully reports same back to the House with the recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Representatives Baker, Biteman, Jennings, Kirkbride, Olson, Pelkey, Ponnell, Salazar, and Winters. Signed, Representative Kirkbride, Chairman. House Bill 18, introduced by Judiciary, Child Abuse or Neglect in Military Families, an act relating to child protection. Mr. Speaker, your committee number one, Judiciary, to whom was referred House Bill 18, Child Abuse or Neglect in Military Families, respectfully reports same back to the House with the recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Representatives Baker, Biteman, Jennings, Kirkbride, Olson, Pelkey, Ponnell, Salazar, Winters. Signed, Representative Kirkbride, Chairman. House Bill 31, introduced by Travel, Recreation, and Wildlife Cultural Resources. State Parks Accounts, an act relating to state parks and cultural resources. Mr. Speaker, your committee number two, Appropriations, to whom was referred House Bill 31, State Parks Accounts, respectfully reports same back to the House with the recommendation that it do not pass. Ayes, Representatives Burkhart, Larson, Nicholas, Walters, Wilson. Noes, Schwartz, Summers. Signed, Representative Nicholas, Chairman. House Bill 40, introduced by Statewide Education, Education Accountability, an act relating to education accountability. Mr. Speaker, your committee number four, Education, to whom was referred House Bill 40, Education Accountability, respectfully reports same back to the House with the recommendation that it do pass with the following amendments. Ayes, Representatives Bovee, Brown, Flitner, Freeman, Hunt, Kinner, Northrop, Paxson, Piperinen. Signed, Representative Northrop, Chairman.
Okay, messages from the Senate. We have, I believe we have one re-referral. Actually, two, I believe. Chairman Kirkbride.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I need to ask for a re-referral for House Bill 15, Sex Offender Registration, asking for a re-referral to Committee Number 2, Appropriations.
House Bill 15 has been re-referred to Committee Number 2, Appropriations. Chairman Northrop.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'd like to re-refer House Bill 40, Accountability, to Appropriations.
House Bill 40 has been re-referred to Committee Number 2, Appropriations. Messages from the Senate.
Message number 115. Mr. Speaker, the bills listed below passed the Senate on third reading by the vote indicated. Senate File 9, Certification of Cases to State Board of Equalization. Ayes 28, excused 2. Signed, Ellen Thompson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message number 116. Mr. Speaker, the bills listed below passed the Senate on third reading in an amended form by the vote indicated. Senate File 43, Alcoholic Beverages Revisions. Ayes 26, excused 2. Conflict 2. Signed, Ellen Thompson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message number 118. Mr. Speaker, the bill listed below passed the Senate on third reading in an amended form by the vote indicated. Senate File 53, Veterans Hiring Preference. Ayes, 23. Noes, 5. Excused, 2. Signed, Ellen Thompson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message number 117. Mr. Speaker, the bill listed below passed the Senate on third reading by the vote indicated. Senate File 59, Government Ethics, Clerks of the District Courts. Ayes, 28. Excused, 2. Ellen Thompson, Senate Chief Clerk.
Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Mr. Speaker, your general file for tomorrow will be House Bill 45, House Bill 59, House Bill 36, House Bill 50, House Bill 18, House Bill 13, and any other bills that may report out of committee before 10 a.m. tomorrow. And Mr. Speaker, with that, I move the House stand in recess. Oh. Mr. Speaker, I move the House adjourn until 10 a.m., Wednesday, January 18th, 2017.
Okay, committee announcements. Chairman Eklund.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Your committee number 8, Transportation, Highways, and Military Affairs, will meet upon adjournment. We'll be discussing House Bill 52, Governmental Immunity Cooperative Public Transportation, and House Bill 78, Salvage Title Updates.
Chairman Barlow.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Your committee number 10 will meet Wednesday, January 18th, H-37, to consider two bills, House Bill 113, Medicaid Waiver Program, Military Personnel, House Bill 119, Senior Citizen Districts, Use of Revenues. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Chairman Kirkbride.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Committee number 1, Judiciary, will meet upon adjournment in Jonah Room L-54 to consider these two bills, House Bill 72, Volunteer Health Care, and House Bill 73, Interference with the Person Providing Emergency Services.
Chairman Greer.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Your committee number 9, Minerals, Business, and Economic Development, will meet tomorrow morning, 9 a.m., H-37. We'll hear House Bill 70, Occupational Safety Health Administration Action, House Bill 96, Microbrewery Permits, House Bill 49, Mountain Daylight Savings Time. And if we have enough time, we'll try to get in House Bill 142, Governmental Immunity Waiver for Healthcare Facilities. Thank you.
Chairman Nicholas.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, the Joint Appropriations Committee will meet on adjournment. It will meet at 8 a.m. at noon and on adjournment tomorrow. The House Appropriations will meet on adjournment as well. And we're not going to do House Bill 109, just in case anyone didn't hear that. That's going to be moved till next week at the request of the sponsor. We will hear House Bill 13, Investments of Public Funds, and several three referrals, House Bill 08, House Bill 30, House Bill 33. And just so those who want to know, on Thursday at noon, we'll hear House Bill 48 at noon. And we'll probably put in three or four of the new referrals we just got, and also House Bill 66 and 11.
Chairman Allen.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Your travel committee number 6 will meet tomorrow, Wednesday, 8 o'clock, in room H-38 to consider House Bill 32, the Ski Safety Act, and House Bill 69, County Resolution Feeding Wildlife. Thank you.
Any other announcements? Members, before we break tonight, I just want to, first of all, congratulate you. I think there was some great debate today. I just want to, I want us to kind of take a look around. Our ceiling is about 12 feet tall. I think the sound in this room is dramatically different, of course, in the chamber of the House. I think and I've been guilty of it myself, having a sidebar conversation just outside the door, and I think it comes right into this room. I think we got to take extra care when we're having those conversations that we lower our voices or we leave the room, I think is important. I think
couple other issues. You know, if a member calls for division or any other action, I know we have a sense in this body where you can feel it actually, but it shouldn't be a thing where we have gestures and it's a any of those type of things. And so let's really police ourselves and each other. And then lastly, I've heard it a couple times today that so the person sitting in this, whether it was Representative Hunt, chairman of the committee of the whole, we want to take special care on the protocol. It's not Mr. Chair. It's Mr. Chairman. If a lady is sitting here, it's Madam Chairman. If I'm sitting here, it's Mr. Speaker. And so we want to make sure we kind of sharpen up our protocol, because I've heard a couple things today. Mr. Chair, when the chairman of the committee of the whole was here. So all those things, let's kind of make sure we sharpen those things up and be crisp and snappy and happy. And so, again, I really appreciate your work, and I think it's a real credit to the people of Wyoming. I think many times we get pigeonholed into what folks see on C-SPAN or perhaps see in national news. And, you know, it's important for folks, I think, to, you know, you guys are up early. I come here usually before 7, and there's already a dozen cars here before me. And I left last night at after 8 o'clock. There's still two representatives in this house, and there's senators down the hall, and there's people working early in the morning into late at night. And I would tell you as a citizen and as your speaker, I really appreciate your dedication and your work. And now we're going to start even getting a few more bills and maybe a few more individual bills that are going to need more work. And so I really implore the committees to do that hard work and to screen that legislation and make it better and as we work through the process. So, again, I appreciate your good work. Off to our committees, and have a good evening. Thank you. We are adjourned until tomorrow, Wednesday, January 18th at 10 a.m.